et cetera, et cetera. Now, so this is going to be Thursday morning at 9 o'clock.
Thank you, Ed.
Okay, let's see here. There's a... The Brookings Institute comes into this picture because Richard came up with a press release, and the press release goes like this. Former NASA scientists and engineers to announce in Washington the analysis of 30-year-old suppressed evidence revealing ancient artificial structures on the moon. Photos show astronauts walking amidst apparent lunar ruins on leaked NASA and Soviet space photographs. Researchers to challenge White House to open NASA files suggest deliberate 30-year-old superpower cover-up based on official government report which warned, quote, civilization could collapse. Evidence throws new light on nagging question, what really happened to Apollo 13? And the reason Richard timed this press conference for this Thursday morning is because the week after that is the Academy Awards, when the fabricated Apollo 13 movie is probably due to get some accolades. So this is a very bittersweet thing when you're spilling the beans on the truth of a mission just before the fake version is about to be put in neon lights and frame. It's a very good timing event. So this goes on. Former NASA scientists, engineers, and other researchers under the aegis of the Mars mission, which is something that Richard has spearheaded, a grassroots space research and policy group of specialists and citizens will hold a major press conference briefing Thursday, March 21, 1996 at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. In the planned two-hour event beginning at 9 a.m., detailed scientific analysis of possible ancient artificial structures found on hundreds of archived NASA and Soviet lunar photographs and thousands of feet of original motion picture film will be presented using state-of-the-art computer and video graphic systems. This material, some of it held in a university archive outside NASA for almost a quarter of a century, is part of a continuing Mars mission investigation into possible suppressed NASA solar system findings based on a highly controversial warning contained in the 36-year-old government report. Now, this report is part of a report that the Brookings Institution... Now, I'm reading this without making many comments. All of you who are familiar with Commander's work and Commander's writings over the last 7 to 8 years now know more about this than Richard is talking about and maybe than Richard knows. Maybe Richard knows more than he's saying in order to not say too much on a first pass. But as you well know from Commander's writings and instruction, there's a lot more on the moon than ancient structures. But it's easiest to bring people into things from the most obvious, from that which is less threatening or least threatening, and that which you have the most data to support. Anyway, we have here, the next part of this news release is he talks about a controversial 36-year-old government report. It was talked about in the New York Times for Thursday, December 15, 1960. The headline said, "Mankind is warned to prepare for discovery of life in space. Brookings Institution," and we all know the key of that in terms of MI6 and the world control. Brookings Institution report says Earth's civilization might topple if faced by a race of superior beings. Sounds pretty paranoid. Now,
sounds good to me.
Yeah. So-called civilization.
they are the Western U.S. branch of the Tavistock Institute, which is totally into political mind control. And the best way to control minds is through religion, aspects of God, etc. And they've been able to hide a lot of stuff out there. And this is why, without reference to any negative input of University of Science and Philosophy and that which took over, basically, the Walter Russell Foundation, is actually controlled by Brookings Institute, and it is operated basically by MI6, which is British intelligence. And if Dr. Binder doesn't know that, although I believe that Dr. Binder would know that because he attacked and counterattacked and attacked and denied outright lies in a public document that he didn't have to make. And in it, he threw in the denial of any involvement. Well, I can guarantee you that Dr. John Coleman knows this. And Desiree Green hates the ground that Coleman walks on and blames Coleman for the downfall of their whole program. Not the Eckers. The Eckers are just catching it. But they know that Coleman is the one with the authority to have brought the attention of the University of Science and Philosophy on George Green. And it was after that that George became involved with Binder. Although George, you notice, never, ever was to court on it. He made his settlement while these people paid the attorney to make his settlement with US&P, and then he got in bed with them. So when all of the truth and the facts are out there, I think that maybe even George will be sorry that he continued to send around these documents, because it doesn't matter who says what, including me. The facts are going to come out. And all of these pages taken out of context will be put into context. And it's really going to be interesting. Because this is the way they plan to take your world. You see, you don't know about all the underground stuff here. And maybe Ed wants to talk about that because he wants to talk about the moon and Mars. You have an underground civilization on Mars. They destroyed it. You destroyed Mars. Just like you're getting ready to destroy Earth. Exactly. And you have an underground civilization here. And what you're not going to be able to hide much longer, and this is something Dr. Hoagland would certainly understand, is the fact that as you start mapping planets, you see, you have seeing eyes now that see through the surface of the Earth, and you're going to see what's under there. And it's going to be impossible to hide it. And ones now from other societies, very underground, underneath your own world, under your oceans, there are various and sundry spots around. And some of those more advanced beings that are trapped under there are basically can come and go, but cannot yet, are not allowed to leave your atmosphere, try to get away from time to time. You shoot them down. You see, you have enough control over them. When you talk about being put into the pit, Satan literally being put into the pit, basically this is what we're talking about. People have to go underground to survive a nuclear holocaust, people. Or you have to be taken off. And the ones who are underground have to wait until an earth or world is again inhabitable. So you're going to have to make your choices whether you go to the heavens, quite frankly, with us, or you go back underground with your enemy. It doesn't mean that all underground are bad or evil or even unjust. It means that you're going to be trapped there. And it's simply that simple. And those symbols that you will encounter from places like the surface of Mars or the surface of the moon, oh, they only touch the surface. And yet, I come forth and say something like this, and I would be laughed out of the hall, except in the presence of a Dr. Hoagland, perhaps. He used to send a lot of things our way. And I appreciated it. It was too far in advance of what we needed to talk about to comment very greatly on what he was surmising and what his investigations had shown about, for instance, a face on Mars. What does it mean? Well, what do your pyramids mean? What does your Grand Canyon mean? What does anything mean? You'll be finding out. That is not what we call knowing. That is information input so that you can achieve your knowing. Because knowing relates to spirit, soul. Learning and education and becoming informed are things of the physical brain, the mind, and being. You've got to know the difference because it does indeed matter. Is there more? From it, I'm talking about.
Oh. Excuse me.
I interrupted, and I don't apologize because this is a discussion. And
no, very good discussion, but I was working on the paper. Apologize. I wasn't paying attention. I was in the middle of talking about the New York Times from Thursday, December 15, 1960, and Richard Hoagland had an interesting anecdote about trying to check with his sources. Now, picture the New York Times. There's an entire department that does nothing but archive old New York Times, and somebody gets paid quite well to sit there and make sure that all back issues of the New York Times are there. But if you look for to verify this story that he has here on his press release, if you try to call up the New York Times, their archive department, and try to pull the December 15, 1960 issue of the New York Times, you find out that the microfilm is missing from May through December, through that issue of that year. In other words, all of the work that was going on in the early space program is missing. That entire area of the New York Times archives is just missing. But Richard, being a resourceful fellow, and being in Washington, called up one of his connections who owed him a favor, who went to the Senate Library archives. I mean, after all, the New York Times is a widely distributed newspaper, and you just might find one in a library somewhere else, which he was lucky enough to find in the Senate archive. And that microfiche of that article is the one that is included in this press release. Now, one thing that I will put on tape while I'm talking here is for those people who have internet access, they can pull any of this Mars mission material that Richard is sharing with the public on Art Bell's page, homepage in the internet, which is just, you just, if you have a web thing that searches, well, they call them search engines, you just type in Art Bell, A-R-T-B-E-L-L, without any spaces, or if you already can understand the language, it's http://, that's part of the language the computer uses, then www.artbell.com. And that will put you right on Art's page, which includes all of his guests, but Art has been giving liberal space within that, within his real estate on the web to Richard Hoagland's work. Now, let me think here. There's a couple other notes I have here from that. What did happen, though, after Richard, well, one of the reasons Richard talked about it Friday night so publicly was for the same reason that we often present material, so that Art kept saying, and readers, listeners kept calling in saying, well, why are you talking about this now if you're going to have a press conference on Thursday? You know, won't you be stopped? And he says, well, I think I have better safety not being stopped by blabbing about it ahead of time on your national show. And he also then, Hoagland suggested that all of the listeners try to induce C-SPAN to cover this. Now, whether they will or not, I don't know. That would be at 6 o'clock our time on Thursday morning. But the fact that Richard was able to get a number of NASA scientists, the one story he told was of one of these NASA scientists was told to just destroy these beautiful early photos. Some of them were taken by what was called the Surveyor series in 1964 and 65, which circled the moon before we landed on it officially. And there were so many interesting photographs taken at that time that this person was told to just destroy. And as an American citizen and feeling that the American public paid for these and at some point deserved to know what they had paid for and what the true results of the missions that they paid for was, he in turn gave them to a university this particular NASA scientist had been associated with, and that university archived them. So when Richard was put in contact with this fellow whenever in the last couple of years, and he says, see, I'd have some interesting pictures that you might want to know about, Richard asked this particular scientist, would you please go to your university and please get those photos so we have them at the appropriate time. So some of these photographs were archived by actual scientists who were indignant by what they were being told by their bosses to do, which was suppress the data. So as Commander says, there is so much data out there right now that it's going to start leaking through. It's going to be hard to suppress all of the data. So I don't know if we'll be able to see it or we'll hear anything about it, but just getting the news out is the important part. Now, there are some other things going on I need to mention just briefly. One of them that you may be aware of is that right now a number of volcanoes are all going off. There are some in South America. There's one in Mexico that's received a lot of attention. There is one blowing its top and causing evacuations in the Aleutian Islands area. If you picture up near Alaska, there at the top of the Pacific Plate. And then they finally this week had to admit to an underwater volcanic, we'll call it a rupture, occurring in the Oregon-Washington area off the coast in the ocean. Some very hot water is bubbling in that area. And if you move up in the sky and look down, and you just picture the one in Mexico, the one off of the Juan de Fuca Plate that Professor Soltec has told us about in the past, there is a lot of plate grinding going on in that area, heavy, heavy pressures. And now you have this activity up in Alaska. All three of these are blowing their tops, and that should give you a very good idea of how much pressure is on the Pacific Plate right now and on those plates which are driven by the Pacific Plate, and therefore how close we are to activity. There's a lot of activity going on. The area around Palm Springs is very, very heavy with activity, and the area around Mammoth Lake, where they had a so-called volcanic warning some time ago, about 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, where they actually told you on the news of a volcanic eruption warning, Mammoth Lakes is still very heavy with activity, though none of that is on the news now. And if you were to picture this squeezing that is going on and from up in the sky, and remember what Soltec said at some point a long time ago, that there is an underground circulatory system of magma. And if there is indeed a lot of squeezing of the plates going on, then there ought to be activity all the way down through the Cascade Range and in through Idaho and Montana and coming back and down through Utah and then coming back in down where Mono Lake is in California. And that's why all of these areas are so active, because the pressure is building on the entire West Coast and on the pressure between these plates. Now, there are other things going on too, but that's enough for just to alert everybody that when you see that much volcanic activity occurring in conjunction with such an increase in earthquake activity, it ought to be telling you that the spring is wound pretty damn tight and it's going to break soon. And I think that's it for my notes, so I'll shut up now.
Thank you. Does anybody else have anything to share? Then let's get on with the viewing.
Commander,
thank you.
You said you were going to say something about the massacre in Scotland.
I said that.
Mm-hmm. I asked about it yesterday, and you said
okay. Oh, I don't think I can. This is one of the sickest things I've seen them do yet. The man that perpetrated this was already sick, twisted, quite an outcast in his community. But this is total manipulation, hitting where you can hit the hardest. And you will notice the repercussions of that today. This is a very, very sad and very, very important day. And it doesn't have anything to do with the children in Scotland. You will note that the British Crown is having all sorts of services while she does honor to these Scottish children, when the greatest holiday in the Irish Republic is at hand and it isn't even mentioned. There are silent wars, and they're borne by the children. And it's an anathema. This is evil in its highest, highest form. You can kill a bunch of people, and the damage to one dog abused will get more attention than all of those people. There's only one thing that will get more attention, and that is killing some of your babies. because they fall into that helpless category of an animal that cannot defend itself. And this is direct results of mind control. It's going to happen more and more and more all over the globe. You ones want to think, well, it's just here. We must just face it here. No, you're the last place to face it. This was the final frontier. When the Khazarian elite one world order could take the United States of America that was birthed under God, they would have final satanic control over the earth sham. And you're not going to win this battle in the way they fought it. You're only going to be able to bring forth a new life, basically out of the rubble when they kill off themselves. And as they start clashing, they will do things like Scotland to bring the attention of the world. Remember little Polly Class that was killed by a man that was let out of prison? And he could not remember anything about it, but he pretty sure he did it. He was let out for that purpose. And look at what else happened. It was election time. It was political time. It happened, and your own governor goes to the funeral. All of your political elite are over there making their big statements. These are tools at the time that nations are having their elections. And you can't even tell which side is at which side. This is why I'm having to remind you. You have to realize that knowing is a spiritual progression. And all else in this physical world is basically an illusion of your making. And therefore, because it is made, it has to utilize that which is already created. But when you recognize the power of your creative power, ability, capability, then you will come up through this mess with a better way. You will validly create a better way. And then the next question is, well, how much time will that take? Well, you have eternity. If you are of the creating portion of God, you have eternity. And we will create what we see as our goal. And the goal has to be beyond a constitution and a free nation, don't you see? It's got to be freedom of the soul to express in the light of God, Creator. So each of us has got to begin to set those sights a little higher and a little higher. And just listen to the news about those Scottish children as it unfolds. And you will note that St. Patrick's Day will come and go, and it will be ignored, intentionally ignored, except for tiny, tiny little lip service when confronted by the Crown of England. You see, Ireland is fighting for its very soul, dominated by the New World Order of the Crown of England. And it all winds right back into British intelligence and the Tavistock Institute and the Club of Rome. These powerful, powerful. And I'm sorry if I cross your sensitivities. The most evil people on the face of the earth. And the other half of those evil people are under the surface of the earth, just waiting to come out. Your enemy is earthbound, does not travel with the hosts of God. You've got plenty of friends out there, but if you function within the outer reaches of the cosmos. You follow the rules, you follow the laws. And the highest laws of all are the commandments of God. Yes.
I'm reading Childhood End right now, and it just seems so real.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like it's a reflection of your command.
Yes. Arthur C. Clarke
right.
is a brilliant, brilliant mind.
Commander?
Yes.
I have one thing here I forgot to share that I wanted to that's more upbeat. Nori Latona brought this to my attention. It's from the January Popular Science, and you can look at it as one of two ways. After talking about the kids in Scotland, this might be a little upper. This is something that, if you look at it one way, it's what's happened to our educational system with students, and on another way, it's humorous, and it is what students have misunderstood in science. And they collected a few of these together, and I thought I'd just share a few for humorous venting. The first one says, from a student says, when you breathe, you inspire. When you do not breathe, you expire.
Touché.
Nitrogen is not found in Ireland because it is not found in a free state. Nitrogen is always bound together as a molecule. So, water is composed of two gins. Oxygen and hydrogen. Oxygen is pure gin. Hydrogen is gin and water. The moon is a planet just like the Earth, only it is even better. Dew is formed on leaves when the sun shines down on them and makes them perspire. Mushrooms always grow in damp places, and so that's why they look like umbrellas. The body consists of three parts: the brainium, the borax, and the abominable cavity.
That latter one will get you.
Yeah. Right? The brainium contains the brain, the borax contains the heart and lungs, and the abominable cavity contains the bowels, of which there are five, A, E, I, O, and U. The alimentary canal is located in the northern part of Indiana. The skeleton is what is left after the insides have been taken out and the outsides have been taken off. The purpose of the skeleton is something to hitch meat to. Rhubarb is a kind of celery gone bloodshot. The tides are a fight between the earth and moon. All water tends towards the moon because there's no water in the moon. And nature abhors the vacuum. I forgot where the sun joins in this fight. A fossil is an extinct animal. The older it is, the more extinct it is. For fainting, rub a person's chest. Or if a lady, rub her arm above the hand instead. Or put the head between the knees of the nearest medical doctor. For a nose, I'll leave you with this one. This is good advice. For a nosebleed, put the nose lower than the body until the heart stops. And that's it.
Knock Commander out.
Deepak Chopra is a world
world-renowned leader in the field of mind-body healing. He was chief of staff at New England Memorial Hospital. Now he's executive director for the Institute of Mind-Body Medicine in San Diego, California. Author of 12 books, including Ageless Body, Timeless Mind, Quantum Healing, and The Return of Merlin. This program is based on his bestseller, The Way of the Wizard. And now, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you very much for giving me the privilege and honor to speak to you tonight. Today's topic is going to be called The Way of the Wizard. And this is the next leap we need to take as a species to recognize that all of us are wizards, that there is deep inside us a wizard, a shaman, a healer, a genius, a Merlin that can create a life of magic for us, that can take us into the world of the miraculous and the magical, and that life can once again become enchanted. Of course, being a seer, the wizard has no gender. It is only the clumsiness of English that turns Merlin into a he, as does our language with God and prophet and seer, and many words that are far beyond male and female. Wizardess is a clumsy word, so please know that wizard applies to women as well as men. If anything, the return of the magical has really been greeted more quickly by women in our society than anyone else, and for that I'm grateful to womanhood. What is the wizard? How do we go about finding the wizard inside us? The route to the wizard is through the evolution of our own consciousness. Jonas Salk, the eminent scientist, the late Jonas Salk, coined the word metabiological evolution. Metabiological evolution, when he said that so-called Darwinian evolution, which was based on the survival of the fittest, is possibly over for us as a human species, that we are in a new phase of evolution, that the next stage of evolution is really the evolution of consciousness, and ultimately it is the evolution of consciousness of consciousness. We have been, for the last several hundred years, in a sense victims of a response that we developed thousands of years ago, which was at that time very crucial to our survival. That response that's genetically programmed within every cell of our body, and scientists recognize that response and give it a label, it's called the flight-fright response. We lived in a hostile environment as hunter-gatherers. We were surrounded by animals who found us quite delicious. And we learned to protect ourselves either by running or by fighting. And that was useful at that time. Now that same flight-fright response is triggered by imaginary fears, by traffic jams, by the stock market, by things people say to us. And that response has very limited function. What it is doing now to us is creating an epidemic of cardiovascular disease, compromised immune systems, the epidemic of cancer, degenerative disorders. But even more importantly, it has given rise to a legacy of war and hatred and predation and conquest and subjugation and ecological devastation. We have become the predators on planet Earth. And just like other predators before us, we are risking our own extinction and risking the extinction of Mother Earth and this wonderful universe of which we are a privileged species. So, I think there is an urgent need for the wizard to return. There is an urgent need for the wizard to wake up within us. The wizard seeks what we have always sought deep inside us. What we have sought as humans is freedom. Ultimately, that is what we are seeking. And there are levels of freedom, of course. You ask somebody, what is freedom? Perhaps the most superficial level of freedom is, I want to be able to do what I want, when I want. A second level of freedom is the ability to fulfill our desires. And we've already covered that in another program, the Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. What is the mechanics through which we fulfill our desires? Material desires, emotional desires, spiritual desires, etc. But there is the third level of freedom. And that third level of freedom is the ability to escape the prison of the known, the prison of our past conditioning, where we are triggered by people and circumstance into predictable outcomes of behavior. We are at the mercy of every passerby in the street. And then there's a fourth level of freedom, which is the ability to make spontaneously correct choices, spontaneous right action, those choices that bring about our evolution and fulfillment, the evolution of those that are affected by that choice. And then we can go beyond that into even other levels of freedom, which we're going to explore in this program today, where we in fact enter realms of consciousness that are beyond waking, beyond dreaming, and beyond sleeping. 99.9% of humanity is continuously circulating between waking, dreaming, and sleeping. Are there other worlds to explore in our own consciousness? A great rishi, a great seer from the Vedic tradition of India said a long time ago, he said, infinite worlds come and go in the vast expanse of my consciousness. They're like motes of dust that are dancing in a beam of light that's shining through a hole in my roof. So that also is another level of freedom, to explore that world beyond waking, dreaming, and sleeping. And finally, freedom is to escape the boundaries of space and time, to experience ourselves in our pure essence, which is spirit. The great poet Rumi once said, you are the unconditioned spirit that's trapped in conditions, like the sun in eclipse. The fact that the real you and me cannot be squeezed into the volume of a body or the span of a lifetime. That freedom to escape the boundaries of space and time. Because we are not in space and time. You've heard the expression, you're in this world but not of it. What does that mean? There's a part of us that is participating in space and time, and yet another part that is free as the wind and beyond. Free as the dust in the dust. Free as the wind in the wind. Rumi once said, in love with life, my soul lives the subtlest of passions, lives like a gypsy, each day a different house, each night under the stars. We're gypsies on planet Earth, here for a short time, here to give us and each other joy. But freedom in that sense can only be experienced when we begin to recognize that the real me is in this world, but not of it. And there are people in the past who have walked this way of the wizard. There have been saints and philosophers and poets and prophets and seers and sages who have walked this way in the past. And today, a lot of wizards are waking up in society. There are some very ordinary people who are not famous, who are wizards. They may be standing in the grocery store in front of you, or flying in that plane that just went by, or walking on the street before your house. It's happening at an astonishingly rapid way. Collective consciousness is merging into what can only be called, or emerging into what it can only be called, a critical mass, when everybody is going to become a wizard. And all these wizards have said the same thing. They have said that deep inside you, there is an inner intelligence. And this intelligence is the ultimate and supreme genius. It mirrors the wisdom of the universe. And when you find this intelligence, then life will become magical and miraculous. And this way of the wizard this journey, which is a journey and a destination at the same time, it begins with a simple question that humanity has asked for thousands of years. The question is, who am I? Who am I? And when we first ask this question of ourselves, I think the first thing that we encounter is confusion and chaos. And that is all right. That is all right. The German philosopher Nietzsche once said, "You must have chaos within you to give birth to a dancing star." Chaos and confusion and uncertainty are the ingredients, the recipe for the emergence of clarity and intuition and order and knowledge and wisdom. Václav Havel, the founding president of the new Czechoslovakia, once said, "Keep the company and seek the company of those who are looking for the truth and run away from those who have found it." So we are on a quest together, we are on a journey together. We're not going to find the truth tonight, but we are going to find it as we go within and start exploring the realms of our own consciousness. And it's not an easy thing to do. The Upanishads of India have called it this path of the wizard, the razor's edge, because it can be treacherous. As we first encounter our inner self, we begin to see confusion. The great Sufi poet Rumi was once asked, "Who are you?" And he said, "If you try and label me and confine me with your labels, you will starve yourself. You will starve yourself of yourself. Confine me in a box of cold words, that box will be your coffin, because I do not know who I am. I'm in astounding, lucid confusion." And he said something really beautiful. He said, "I'm your own voice echoing off the walls of God. The walls of God that are infinite, unbounded. Your own..."